The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. The fall is coming. I'm feeling the weather. I love this weather. I love it when it gets slightly cold. I don't want the hot days of the summer. I'm getting some cold wind here in Alberta. Enjoying it very thoroughly. Very soon, President Trump will be perhaps flying over Alberta for a moment. He's headed to Alaska. On August 15th, he will be meeting in Alaska with Vladimir Putin. That is quite impressive. We might get some serious negotiation, maybe some peace deal that somehow will be between the US and Russia. But as I've pointed out, will Zelensky accept it, or will they try to impose it against Zelensky's will? That is the question that will be answered on August 15th. Putin has indicated, I'm willing to stop the war in exchange for Eastern Ukraine. That's been the position that he's always had. So no move there. It's still the same demand that those places that he has conquered should remain his. Blimpy Supervisor says, you're feeling the fall in August. Wow. Well, I mean, yeah, I call it the fall or whatever, but it's less hot than last week. It's getting colder. In fact, today I tried activating the natural gas heater furnace just to make sure that it was ready for the winter. It seems all operational, so it hadn't been working for a couple of months. But the furnace is ready. I'm ready to survive another winter. It's quite impressive, the summer in Canada. It doesn't cost much to live. You have no natural gas. You have no natural gas cost. You have no electricity is very low. So it's really the winter. The winter months are costly, but when you're in the summer, you can operate on a couple hundred dollar expenses to maintain the home. Rodil Acid says, fall, it's like 35 degrees plus for the next week. Well, I don't know about you. Maybe you're in the US, but here it feels cold for today. Today I've opened the windows and I was kind of enjoying the cold. Blimpy Supervisor, Prude says, Jeff, I like your food post, but are you normally eating alone? Just curious, because I see eating as a social / family thing. I would say we live very decoordinated lives. So, I don't follow a regular schedule on my eating. There's no such thing as breakfast or dinner in my life. And anyways, I eat things that are very different from the kids. So it's very rare that I will prepare a meal that I want to eat and that the kids want to eat too. So most of the time we eat separate, and that's because for now it's not going to be a family thing, because I have young kids, and young kids, they don't eat anything. There's stuff that they don't like, and they won't eat sauce where you would have sauce. They won't eat sauce where you would have a side. They won't want the side. So very often, children food is more basic, more restrictive, and they have more capricious demands on food than an adult. So these things taken into consideration, and we don't even have a table. We don't even have a family table here in Alberta. We live with separate tables for the children and the adults. And the adults is just a two-person table. So, yes, that's how I live. No, I do not subscribe to the normal eating in family. I know it's a big thing. I know there's this whole image in Christmas movies, you know, the father cutting the turkey and all, and the mother just preparing all and like a satellite hovering around the table, making sure that everything is okay. This is all very moving, and you know, it's all evocative. But I don't think it's a good lifestyle. I don't think it's a good lifestyle to be having eating schedules. I believe that if you could skip meals, you should. I believe that the human body is probably designed to eat once or two times per day. I believe that the human body is not designed to have three meals organized and planned. And I believe that you should just go with the flow of what's in your fridge, not have a plan for a recipe and be too complex about it. Now, that's what I believe about life. I believe it's also more healthy. I'm not claiming that I'm healthy, because I ate too much in my life, but perhaps my life would have been different if I hadn't been educated on this scheduled meal thing. Perhaps I would have eaten less, but for now, up to the end of my life, I think that will be the mode I eat in. More like nothing is settled, nothing is... And I would say my whole house is a little bit like this. Like, I don't have a couch. I don't have a couch. People have couches. And there was someone on social media this week saying people don't remember what it was, the 90s idea of a lounge, having a lounge in the house. It was a social place that was almost a public place, where children were coming in and they were just chilling with other children in the home, on the couch, in the lounge. I don't have a couch. I believe it leads to a different lifestyle. There's only bed or standing or sitting at your place in the kitchen. That's also part of my philosophy. There's many aspects to it. First, a lounge is a waste of a room. It's a room where you could have a bedroom, where you could have one more baby. So that's the first prima facie case against the lounge, is you could have had one more baby. Then the second case is it leads to a kind of lazy lifestyle of sitting, and sitting becomes your main position of the day. I like the alternance between standing, exploring the outside, and if you're really tired, then lay down and don't do it on a couch, but do it on your bed. John Drake says one meal a day was the norm for most of human existence. Absolutely. Blimpy Supervisor says I have a couch, but it's in view of my home gym, so I'm constantly invited over. Prout says couches and lounges are for socializing. Yeah, well, I socialize outside the home or in the kitchen. That's not necessary to have a lounge. Rodilacid says, JF, do you have any impact from the forest fire? I think they are in Manitoba and eastern provinces. We're getting smoke and particles. Does the smoke only move east, or do you get some too? I've seen some degree of fires. I've not seen them with my eyes, but sometimes you do have a little bit of a smell of burnt wood. I would say it's more pleasant than a derangement for me. I haven't experienced it to the point where it would be bad on my breathing or whatever. In fact, I have my asthma pumps, and I haven't used them for months. And generally, I would say there's something wrong with the air in eastern provinces, because here in Alberta, the air I've been breathing is very, very good. Very happy with it. I still carry my asthma pumps that I needed to use rather regularly in the east. Maybe once a month, you know, once every 2 weeks. Here, since I'm here and it's been now 8 months, 9 months, I have not needed these asthma pumps at all. Not a single time. So there's something wrong with the east. I think people are gonna hopefully die of cancer and find out what's wrong with their society, because not only have they persecuted me politically, but they seem retarded. Everyone seems retarded in the east. Now that I see what a healthy society looks like, where you can go to anywhere, even the Dollarama cashier has some degree of intelligence and can speak English. There's something wrong with the provinces of the East. I'm so happy that I'm gone from there. Diana Panchenko was the Journalist of the Year in Ukraine and among Ukraine's top 10 most influential women. However, she is persecuted by Zelensky for being critical of his government. Today, YouTube did its part by canceling her account with more than 2 million subscribers. Unbelievable how to this day, YouTube is still living in siding with the regimes, whatever they are. Unbelievable that they're still doing it so obviously. Ukraine journalism. I mean, this woman was just having an opinion on war and Zelensky and was critical. Unbelievable that YouTube is going still in 2025. And they don't have the excuse of hatred here. They're really just siding with the Zelensky regime. Rodilacid says, that could be true. If the wind generally moves eastward, then all of the particulate and pollen from the prairie moves eastwards toward Quebec and the Maritimes. I mean, I was reading the book about carrots and vitamin A. And he noted that there are some diseases that seem specific to the Maritimes and where you barely see them in Alberta when you look at the Canadian statistics. And he was trying to make a case around vitamin A perhaps or some habits, but more generally what I've recorded from this book is, oh, there's something wrong. There's something wrong in the lifestyle of the eastern provinces. Is it the communism? Is it the fluoride? I don't know. But there's something wrong about it. And somehow, by trying to improve my life, every step, I got closer and closer to eventually finding Alberta as the best place to live. And hopefully we get some separation activity. We've had some progress on this. The Supreme Court of Canada came out and said that Alberta cannot hold referendums where it asks its population whether they want to separate. And so this is typical of the Supreme Court of Canada. They start with the Canadian Constitution, and it's like, oh, there is no mechanism in the Constitution for provinces to separate. And so from there, they impose any sort of arbitrary rulings, including they say there needs to be a clear majority for a referendum for a province to separate. And they don't even define what a clear majority is, but they suggest it's more than 50%. So anyways, the Supreme Court of Canada will always do shenanigans to to try to block any sort of effort at independence. That being said, it seems that the premier, Danielle Smith of Alberta, has responded to this, and she made up a new law that says, okay, it's not a referendum, it's a public consultation, and public consultation are allowed in Alberta. So she's trying to kind of skirt the obligatory referendum term into a more loose consultation term. But it's the same thing. I think we may have a vote coming, maybe in the next year or two, about whether people want to separate from Canada in Alberta. It's going to be a long path because this vote will not cause the separation, even if it was above 50%. But it would start a process of negotiation, and it would give some leverage to Alberta to say, hey, if you want to keep us in, at least let us free. Prude sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, Jeff, are you ethnically French? Just asking because my family is French Acadians from Louisiana. I wonder if we are related down the line. Well, we are all related down the line, so it's all a matter of relativity. How related are we? So yes, I am ethnically French, very pure ethnic French, with descendants that are from the Catholic Church, traceable over 300 years back to the southern France region. So definitely a very pure Western European phenotype French that has been basically captured by the Quebecois society and preserved in a way, because the French in Louisiana have mixed much more than the Quebecois did. So I'm kind of a crystallized imprint of what someone living at the border between Spain, France, a farmer, maybe some Portuguese farmer mixed in there, but definitely this very specific region of Western Europe. All of my genes come from there. And you kind of get these genes in the way they would have been 300 years ago, because there's been no mixing, because the Quebecois society has been a relatively contained reproductive group. Now, it's important to understand that the French Acadians are not exactly the same genetic ensemble as the French Quebecois. They are part of a separate migration event. So the Quebecois people has been formed independently and by an independent migration event coming from France to Quebec, as opposed to early Acadian settlers who have been coming also from France, but it was a different group and at a different time. So are we related? Yes, but not as much as two Quebecois would be today. Guy Slapkins says, JF, what's your opinion on the Stop Killing Games initiative? Is it a good idea to make a law so a company will not be able to make mistakes and compete on the freedom axis? Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Are you talking about the movements to censor games, to censor Steam? Are you talking about the pressure of credit card companies to make games unavailable on Steam? What Killing Games initiative, what is that? And then you say make mistakes and compete on the freedom axis. I'm not sure what... Okay, he specifies, like forcing Facebook not to censor so there wouldn't be a niche for Elon's X. I am absolutely for any law that forces genuine free market of IDs, genuine free market interactions on the internet. And yes, obligation to do business, independent of political belief, independent of content. Basically, if it doesn't violate the law, you have to accept it. I am for that kind of laws. And as a libertarian, my initial instinct on this would be to be against these laws. And I would say, let people discriminate. But then that gets you into the extreme. Like, I believe that a shop owner should be able to refuse service to anyone. I believe that they could be able to do it on the basis of race, of gender, if they want. You could have a meat butcher who says, I'm only selling to whites. I don't want to hear any of this halal, blah, 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 blah. I'm only serving to whites. And you go elsewhere if you want your meat. Now, that is what I would wish in the ideal. Because in the ideal, I know that this creates a society where people use these rights. People use this right to discriminate to improve the world. And you could have, for example, some of the improvements that discrimination could bring in our lives is homogeneous communities, an absence of forced interaction and forced integration, which is basically, you know, we force white people to be present around black people. We give our societies give the gift of white presence, and it gives it at the cost of white people to black people. Now, that's in the ideal. But in the ideal, everyone can discriminate, and I can make my own Facebook, and I can say this is the Facebook for whites, and guess what? It's going to be the only interesting Facebook. Now, because we're not there, because we are in a society that forces integration, I say we might as well, since we don't have that right, and since we're not going to have it, we're not going to have the right to decide who gets in our shops, okay? So since we don't have it, then let us also deprive the left of this opportunity. Because right now, what do you have? You have discrimination is allowed only in one sense, the sense that the left would judge moral. One of the most shocking things as a young man rising into our society was when I discovered that as a young man buying a car, I would have to pay more for my car insurance because I'm a man. You have no idea how disgusted I was at this. Wait a minute, I've been taken through the whole public school system that has educated me, saying how our societies are the best because we're against discrimination. Discrimination is the greatest evil. And the first thing you tell me as an adult, when I gain my liberty to commerce and liberty to transact, I buy a car, and you tell me that I have to pay twice as much because I'm a male and because other males are causing more accidents. I was really pissed off that day. I was really pissed off to learn that the anti-discrimination position of our society is a joke. It's a fucking lie. You're okay if you discriminate against white heterosexual males. All you have to do is make sure that you don't discriminate against anything else. So in that context, where discrimination is being allowed but only against white heterosexual males, we might as well combat discrimination. So we're the last category, that's victim of it, we might as well fight against it. And yes, therefore, I am for laws of the kind that Trump just signed, the executive order forcing banks to transact with white people, forcing banks to transact independent of political belief. This was very much needed because we didn't see it coming, but the left is more aggressive in their use of discrimination than the right is. And it's been terrifying, this escalation of leftist debanking. Leftist debanking, because basically leftists are terrorists. They will call the bank. They will say, how are you dealing with JF? is dangerous. And then you have the whole definancialization consequences that come from this basically extortion. Ben Terlope sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, what are the evolutionary effects of wearing prescription glasses? Well, there are no effects on your genes. But you could argue there is an evolutionary effect. Maybe your glasses will allow you to reach a higher degree in reading than you should have had or would have had. Maybe, therefore, you will occupy a place of the ecological niche where you are taking the jobs to someone who has better vision, but you can do that job because of your glasses. And therefore, you are contributing to more babies in the future that are more handicapped than they should be in terms of their vision. So, like any sort of help, any sort of healthcare, any sort of saving people in any way, evolutionarily, generally makes things worse. So you shouldn't have had babies. You should have died from not seeing a snake come and bite you when you were 1 year old. But because of your glasses, you survived. And because of your glasses, you have babies. And because of your glasses, you have a job. To the extent that this theory is correct, that these assumptions are correct, then you will make vision on average worse in the next generation than it could have been if you had been selected out. Prude sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, when do you think BTC will dip again? 80K is my target buying price. I bought more last dip, but do you think it will go that low again? Well, we've had the dip happened. The dip happened. Now there is a question. Will there be another dip or was it it? What I will tell you is that the dip happened and it was shorter and quicker than I think most people thought. I had personally sold at the peak expecting, you know, maybe it's going to drop more. It went back up super quick. So those are the signals of a very bullish market. I wouldn't wait for a 80K dip. It's not going to come, I believe. I believe that we are either right now in the second peak of a double top, or we are in the second peak before flying up even more upward going forward. And I believe that ETH...
You were talking about diamonds and jewelry earlier. Are they not that useful for keeping emergency funds on hand, or should one prefer metals or cash? A common rule says to have $1,000 in cash for emergencies and 3 to 6 months of wages for sudden expenses.
Okay, I'll answer this once I'm done answering the Bitcoin situation. So Bitcoin, I believe we are either in a double top that will dip again. But if the dip does happen, I don't expect it to go as far as 80K. If we are headed toward a dip, it would be in the next month, and maybe 90, maybe 95. But I don't think there's going to be much of an opportunity for a big dip in the short term. I wouldn't see it going further down than 95 very much. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Those are not calls that I'm making 100% sure. It's just my impression is we're still very bullish. And ETH has not even met its old all-time high. So ETH has massive upward potential because it hasn't even remade its ATH, and Bitcoin has passed its last ATH. So if you expect ETH to track Bitcoin, you would expect ETH to be much higher than it currently is, which was reflected this morning in the big rise of ETH. So ETH really is the right play these days if you want to do a little more than the appreciation you would get under Bitcoin. So my belief is we are either headed toward a small dip, or we're just going straight up, straight up, straight up, and Bitcoin will make new ATH, and perhaps ETH will make new ATH. Those are the situations. Those are my calls for right now, although I'm not sure of what I'm telling you. Right now, if you enter the market right now with the hope of gaining, you are doing so under some risk. It's not like the absolute certain purchase that you could do 3-4 years ago where you're going to do a 4x, 5x. Right now, entering the market is risky, but it is rewarding, and it's the only thing you can really do. I don't feel that we're headed toward a down. I think we had the down in the last week, and it was shorter and smaller than most people expected, than what I expected. Prude says buying target. I mean, I don't have a buying target because I've already bought back. So right now, you could be stuck in a situation where the price will mostly go only higher and higher. So I wouldn't tell you a buying target. I would just tell you, you know what it is. You know what it is. Sometimes you just have to look at a day and say, I'm going to try to wait for the lowest point, but it's probably not going to be very low. So I don't have a buying target. No, I have rebought in a few days ago, many days ago already. So let's look at this super chat from Jackie Chun.
You were talking about diamonds and jewelry earlier. Are they not that useful for keeping emergency funds on hand, or should one prefer metals or cash? A common rule says to have $1,000 in cash for emergencies and 3 to 6 months of wages for sudden expenses. You were talking about diamonds and jewelry earlier. Are they not that useful for keeping emergency funds on hand, or should one prefer metals or cash? A common rule says to have $1,000 in cash for emergencies and 3 to 6 months of wages for sudden expenses.
I don't know why it's playing twice, but anyways. Diamonds are simply not a good... The premium between how much you're going to pay for that diamond at the shop and how much you're going to get at a pound shop for it is ridiculous. The only time it made sense is the inflationary 60s to 80s. Maybe if you bought a diamond in the 60s, and maybe if you happened to need money in the 80s, maybe you did a good bargain. But right now, you would buy a diamond, you would lose 90% of the money if you go to the pawn shop to get rid of it. Those are the low price range. So no, it's not a good store of value at all. The best store of value for emergency funds, and it's absolutely great to have emergency funds, yes. The best store of value is USDC, USDT, and when you're in a bull run, BTC and ETH. Imagine the capacity. Imagine you have 10,000, 20,000 on the side in ETH fund or BTC fund that you know you can use. Within 1 hour, you can pass from your hardware wallet to a platform like crypto.com, sell, and then it's straight in your bank account. Within an hour, you can have 20K available for addressing an emergency or whatever. So, and it's even more appreciative than diamonds. So there's no reason why you would store that money in diamond, a thing that is probably losing value down the line in the coming decades, versus you put it in Bitcoin. It's going to continue growing with the growth of Bitcoin. And on top of it, it's immediately available to you in a way that's very flowy. You know, you don't even need to go to a pawn shop. Going to a pawn shop, selling your diamond, that's a thing you'll do only once in your life. Bitcoin, you can go in and out and in and out depending on the size of your emergency. Rodita says, also, the bears have a monopoly on diamonds, and they could flood the market and make the price plunge to nothing. Also, you can make artificial diamonds. Imagine if that process becomes almost free. Absolutely. This is why I'm predicting diamonds are probably going to be the biggest victims of the crypto world before gold. Gold eventually, but diamonds are gonna... Bro, you know, diamonds, let us not forget that diamonds is just an arrangement of carbon atoms. Like, literally, a log of wood is made of the same thing as diamonds are. There is no special rare metal in a diamond. A diamond is nothing else than the most compact expression of the carbon crystallization capacity. So there's nothing in there other than the fact that it happens to be very solid. So it has actually industrial applications because it's the most solid known substance. So if you have something very, very hard to cut, diamond will make the best knives. But I think this is where we're headed for diamonds. Diamonds for jewelry, we're going to be slowly leaving that world. Stray says, diamonds are a girl's best friend. Are you a girl? They do make a good abrasive. The girls or the diamonds? Gusparovsky says, does only one gender of a species is enough to push prettiness of species improve overall? Ah, that's a very deep philosophical question. Because we've talked on this show about how maybe the gay gene. So the gay gene, one theory of the gay gene is when it finds itself in a woman, it makes the woman more attractive, more feminine, therefore more babies. When it finds itself in a male, it accidentally makes the male more feminine and therefore less attractive. But because it has so much value with its actions in the female, it doesn't matter that it fails when it's in males. So you end up having effeminate gays and beautiful woman, and it's the same gene that does the two jobs. In light of this, you can think that an evolutionary pressure selected only on one sex, only advantaging on one sex, could change the game for genes in a way that impact the other sex also. It's absolutely possible. Because here's the ultimate test of viability of your theory. The mitochondria. And this is something that gives me goosebumps. Like, horror movies don't scare me. But this scares me. Okay? Male life relies on the mitochondria. The mitochondria is this part of our cells that is actually an independent genome. It is a bacteria that we've ingested maybe 2 billion, 3 billion years ago. I don't know. But we failed to digest it, and now it lives within us. But the mitochondria line finds itself to be dead inside each male in which it lives. So the mitochondria, as an organism that has successfully lived for 3 billion years or 2 billion years, it makes its living by getting into females, well, being into females from the start of their life, and transmitting themselves through the egg to the next generation. When it finds itself in a male, no matter how long the life of the male is, the mitochondria knows that it will die. And it has no reason to live, really. So here's the scary part, the horror movie part. Men are maintained alive by this oxygen process that the mitochondria does, but the mitochondria has zero evolutionary interest at keeping us alive. The mitochondria is only accidentally keeping males alive, not through its own evolutionary interest, but simply because it does what it has to do. It powers things, it produces energy, and it does it so well in a way that it has co-evolved with the female to do so. But the male line, every time it finds itself in the main line, it means death to them from the start. Now, that's if you want to get out of the scary part, because the scary part is how do we even live? And then you start asking yourself, why do males die so early? Is it possible that ultimately our genome is so... our mitochondria are evolved so much for the female and so not at all for the male that it explains why male life is short and why we die earlier of cardiac stuff and stuff like this. If you want to get out of the scary part, if you want to find a reason for the mitochondria to still like males, the mitochondria may be keeping the male alive so that it can help its sister kin survive in the female. So in a way, because males are necessary for continued female existence, the mitochondria may say, all right, I'm a kamikaze here. I may die forever, but I can basically ensure that an almost perfect copy of me survives in the sister, survives in the mother, survives in the cousin. And so I'm going to keep this male alive because maybe he's going to reproduce with a mitochondria bearing female that happens to bear me too. So that is the big conflict at the heart of mitochondrial selfishness, as Robert Rivers would call it. We don't know much about mitochondrial selfishness. But what we know was collected by Robert Rivers and another author in the book Selfish Genetic Elements. And there is theory in biology that we could see some effects, maybe, of mitochondrial selfishness. I don't remember in the book if they take a strong position on what we know about it and whether anything really qualifies, but they discuss the theory very well. The theory is basically you have mitochondria have a kind of farmer relationship with the human body where they're like, I want to keep reproducing, but if I reproduce too much, I kill this whole body and I die with it. And so one of the predictions of the theory is mitochondrial genetic absorption, where it is predicted that the mitochondria may get rid of its genes, but dump them into our genes. So dump them into our genome so that the mitochondria can be lighter, a lighter operation, so that has more selfishness for itself, because that therefore making its replication less costly. That is one of the phenomena. Now, to go back to your question, which threw me on this speculation, is it possible that a species becomes more beautiful merely through action on the female, but leads to more beautiful male babies accidentally as part of it? Absolutely, I think so. I think so because consider, for example, the... It's like you threw me on something deep, and now the ideas are coming in, the powerful ideas. Here's another powerful idea for your theory. The male tits. Men are not flat-chested. Imagine, we could have been flat-chested. There was no reason for our tits. We don't need boobs. They have zero function, absolutely zero function, Gusparovsky is saying. But the tits are there. So here's an example of your theory in action. And I'm not saying that male tits are beautiful, but maybe we could argue that perhaps it's more beautiful, it feels more natural to have male tits than it would to have some sort of extraterrestrial, just flat-chested wrap of skin. That would be kind of weird, wouldn't it? So in a way, pressure on the female has already changed the male body. And I'm sure that the same thing is true of facial features. You'll notice when you look at human subgroups, there is a correlation between male beauty and female beauty. If I look at a part of the species that I find particularly beautiful, let's say the Swedish female or the Russian Eastern European female, definitely, if I look at the males of this part of the species, although I'm not sexually attracted to them, definitely, you can say that their distanciation from the average of humanity is in the exact same direction as the females. That is, if the female has paler hair, the male also have paler hair in Sweden. The females have more fine facial features. The male has a more fine cranium and facial feature in Sweden if you compare to the average male from another part of the human species. So yes, definitely there is kind of an accidental correlation between female selection and evolution and its effect on even completely useless feature on the side of males like tits. Magister Templi says, I'm not sure about that. Got a small gyno in my left nipple way before I smoked weed and nothing since. Okay, talking about drugs and earrings in the tits. Gosparovsky sends $10. He says, totally deserved, sir. Well, thank you for your generous donation. DC police commander placed on leave over deliberately falsifying crime data. The police union has accused Polyam of deliberately falsifying the data. This is absolutely disgusting. These leftist cities and leftist states, they want to reduce their crime statistics. And so for doing so, they get on the scene of the crime and they try to reduce things from felonies to non-felonies. So they were sending in teams. Their job was to, you got stabbed by a knife. You got stabbed. Stab is the word that you're using. What I see is an injury. You got injured by a knife. You can't make this shit up. And now they were sending the victims to the hospitals. And they were filing it as injury with a knife. So basically they were taking what were stabbings and they were giving it the same classification as if you were cutting cheese at home and oops, you cut your finger with your cheese knife. They were reclassifying it that way. Leftists have been doing this for decades. They've been doing this with race statistics, so much so that all of the public numbers at this point are meaningless, absolutely meaningless. So that's why in a debate these days, if a leftist came to me and said, well, there's that much crime by whites, I deny all of them. I deny all of them. You're not going to convince me that there's even one crime that was ever committed by a white person. Show me the picture. Show me the genetic test. Show me it's not an Hispanic. Show me it's not a North African. Show me it's not an Arab. I will deny everything because I'm tired. They've played with it so much that they've taken all these criminal populations that are Caucasian and they declared them as white. And now they're like, oh, see, black people just commit a little more crime than white people. Well, no. Not a little more. It's because your statistics are messed up. And we're feeding this crap into AI And now AI is integrating all of the leftist crap. Bro, the society is so parasitized, so filled with fucking slime, informational slime. And we have Elon Musk crying, saying, I don't know why Grok is woke. It kills me. Why? Why is Grok woke? Grok is woke because you haven't taught Grok the way I wanted to teach Grok. You haven't hired me, Elon. And you haven't hired me so I can teach Grok what I learned, which is that the entire world is informational slime. It's fucking disgusting. Everyone has tried to inject at every possible level the lie. The police is worried, oh, I'm gonna affect tourism if I declare this a stabbing. So let's declare this an injury. Then they have these teams of leftist liars coming in and pressuring onto the police, making sure it happens. And then you have the PhD Jewish academic just taking in the data and making his own tricks with it. All of the layers of acquisition of data are all filled with lies. Everything is a big lie. Leftists have been trying to hide criminality for decades. Non-reporting, abolition of race statistics, lesser offense reporting, absence of prosecution. Their utopia isn't coming, so they mess up the numbers on paper. Same with school grades. We are reaching generations of young people becoming adults right now. Some of them are just physiologically retarded. Some of them are brilliant. They all have the same grades. Because the concept of grades has been found to be racist. And we're doing the same with crimes. And we are at the point where the statistics don't mean anything anymore. Don't talk to me about, oh, there's 17% criminality rate here, and I don't believe a single number. Show me how you acquired this data. And no, I don't believe the court system. I don't believe they work objectively. Even the court system is trying to fudge the data by trying to liberate. They will keep a white person in the boot, but they will liberate a black person on technicalities. And they're letting it happen because they want to reduce the number of blacks in prison. And despite their massive effort, they still haven't they still haven't succeeded at equalizing us. Imagine. Despite the massive injustices and bias that they've applied, the race statistics are still indicative that there's more crimes by blacks than by whites. And Nick Martel says, how tall are you, JF? I'm 5'6". I am not a tall person. John Drake says, Canada is reducing their standards for minorities to become doctors. I read that today. Bro. At some point, my doctor...
On Lamarckism, I've heard some arguments that maybe those experiments showing evidence for it were due to some epigenetic mechanism we don't understand yet. For example, if you work out a lot, it registers on some epigenetic factor which mutates the DNA.
Let me reread this.
On Lamarckism, I've heard some arguments that maybe those experiments showing evidence for it were due to some epigenetic mechanism we don't understand yet. For example, if you work out a lot, it registers on some epigenetic factor which mutates the DNA.
That's it. I'm feeling the need to kill. I like kill a human being. They're pissing me off with these Lamarckism and epigenetics. Okay, let me try to recover emotionally and try to answer your question fairly. An epigenetic mechanism. You work out a lot. Some epigenetic factor triggers. and then it mutates DNA. Well, no. There's so much wrong with all this. First, when we call of epigenetics, when we talk of epigenetics, we don't talk of mutating DNA. First, we talk of making changes to the body that do not impact the genes and therefore do not mutate the genes. Typically, epigenetics, which is absolutely poorly named, because epigenetics, is that an epigenetic change? Hey, JF, do I have the genes for having my elbow folded? And now did I just activate the genes for having my elbow extended? Have I made an epigenetic change to my elbow? Hey, look, I have the genes to have my elbow closed in, and I have the genes to have my elbow extended. Is that epigenetics? Yes. Yes. It is epigenetics. But no one will ever call it epigenetics. Why? Because the people who want to study epigenetics, they want their thing to be so special and so molecular and so technical. But really, you're talking about phenotypic changes that are outside of the genes. So that's a phenotypic change that's outside of the gene. Here it is. I have the genes for all positions of elbow. I have the genes for this position and the genes for this position and the gene for this position. Now, how did the genes allow for such epigenetic plasticity? Well, the genes have created little attaches that we call tendons. They've attached it at the bones. Yes, the bones are made of DNA, but the tendons are not directly attached to DNA. They're attached epigenetically to the contour of the bones. And then some genes have created little muscle fibers that can contract or expand based on some molecular mechanism that's like... All of this is epigenetics. None of it will ever be called epigenetic. But the proper term for all of this is phenotypic plasticity. I have phenotypic plasticity. My genes are not encoding a fixed form. They are encoding forms of various degrees of freedom. So first error in your super chat is there is no amount of workout that will, through some epigenetic factor, mutate DNA. Because epigenetics, by definition, is not mutation. Now, what is an epigenetic factor that's around DNA that could be impacted by working out? Yes, there is methylation of DNA, for example. So normally, when people talk of epigenetics, they talk of methylation of DNA. Oh, wow, you have a little molecule that can be annotated that says annotated or not annotated. And you can have this at this line, this part of your DNA and that part of your DNA. That's what we call methylation of DNA. That's the classical, what they call epigenetics. But again, we're just into phenotypic plasticity. We're just into, annotate these genes for it to be more transcribed, and annotate this other gene for it to be less transcribed. Annotate JF's elbow to be more folded, or annotate it to be less folded. You have nothing that even touches the theory of evolution yet, because you're still into the mechanistics of degrees of freedom of the phenotype. And there is nothing that you can ever learn about this other than the theory of phenotypic revolution, which is that sometimes the elbow starts farming you and creates a whole civilization with your dead body, and then starts raping your children for the next billions of years and builds an entire life form over yours. But leaving aside the theory of phenotypic revolutions, nothing that workout can induce changes your genes. And so you're saying maybe the Lamarckists, were fooled by some epigenetic mechanism. Well, the Lamarckists, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what inspired them. It was some degree of phenotypic plasticity, definitely. But phenotypic plasticity is just the fact that your genes don't encode fixed forms, they encode malleable forms. And malleable forms are the only thing that can survive. So, of course, life will be made of. So, of course, if you have a plant that doesn't react to the environment, that doesn't tell the difference between the air and the ground, it won't know the difference where to build its root, where to build its fruits. And so the plant eventually becomes malleable. The plant evolves to put roots in the ground, detect that it's the ground, and put fruits in the air and detect that it's the air. Every aspect of human culture learning is all plasticity, phenotypic plasticity. All aspects of movement, locomotion, decision-making, breathing, learning, moving, deciding, breathing, ejaculating, all of the function of the human body are all phenotypically plastic to an extent. And all functions in life, arguably. There is nothing in life that's fixed. Even the smallest, ridiculous molecules produced by some protozoid, whatever, unicellular organism, it's going to be produced at a certain rate in a certain time, and at some other rate at some other times. The Lamarckists have committed a much greater mistake than to think that we have to study the degrees of plasticity of the phenotype. They got it wrong because they thought that those degrees of plasticity were transmissible. They were transmissible to the next generation. As it turns out, very few things are actually transmissible to the next generation, because all of it has to pass through the point in time at which it's the zygote. So all of it must be contained in the zygote. You can't teach culture to the zygote. You can't do anything to the zygote other than make sure that its content leads to a human being. Now, the zygote, as it turns out, and most of what makes you human is what's carried by the zygote from generation to generation, and it's the genes. So the Lamarckians are wrong simply because they thought that if you sweat and you sweat a lot and you work out a lot, your children will work out a lot and this will kind of pass on to them through some other mechanism than the genes. but no, it turns out it's only the genes. And at every generation, you don't pass on that much. You really just get selected. You get selected and you pass on 50%. That gets selected again and pass on 50%, and gets selected again, pass on 50%. Lamarckianism, and this is frustrating to me, that academic agent is like, it doesn't sound so wrong. Well, it is wrong. So, unless you can explain to me how a parental behavior gets transmitted to a children, and now, of course, you're going to come at me with human culture. But human culture can be addressed using separate arguments. This is where you have first to get out of Lamarckism, and then we can have a discussion about trickster printers and how even the transmission of culture is not Lamarckian. It is Garryipian, really. and it's not that I want to exaggerate here, but with the revolutionary phenotype, I have come to a conclusion about the shapeability and sculptability of human culture across generations in a way that it is not a life form, it is not a meme, it is not a self-interested entity. Rather, it is being trickster printed by brain devices but that are shaping the memes to their interest. Yes, mimetics destroyed by chapter 9, says Guy Slapkins. So it's neither Lamarckian nor Darwinian. It's Darwinian from the perspective of our genes. It's Gariepian from the perspective of the memes. It's there's a whole new theory needed, and I provided it for how do we think of cultural transmission without losing our shits? Because that's been the standard. People have been extremely rational talking about Darwin, but when it came to human culture, they lost their shit, really, and they lost control and they started saying some stupid stuff. I have integrated it back into a framework that is Darwinian. And ultimately I may sound extremely megalomaniac here, but I think I'm the Albert Einstein of biology. Because I believe that I have come with a concept of relativity, of embeddedness in the genetic interest. So the typical question was, is it Darwinian or is it Lamarckian or whatever? I say it's Darwinian with respect to what? With respect to which replicator are you talking Darwinian? Because I have studied a very special event that has happened 4 billion years ago on planet Earth. And at that time, there were two replicators living in the same organism. And they were engaged in a replicator tango. So one was creating the other and vice versa. So who's the Darwinian entity here? Ultimately, we are all phenotypic, plastic things of a referential gene. A referential gene level. And our referential gene level happens to be DNA. But back in the days where there was the RNA-DNA replicator tango, it was a different game, and there was no prior given to DNA. And in fact, DNA was the new kid on the block at some point. So you're always in a Darwinian relationship with respect to a what we call sometimes in the private hangout, the private monthly hangout, we call it a gene carpet, or the kind of baseline layers of genes on which you live. What do we have in the news? President Trump signs order banning banks from debanking Americans over their political or religious beliefs. Excellent. Marjorie Taylor Greene says our government feels under occupation.
I would proffer that about 75% of the Republican majority is beholden to AIPAC in their votes on these questions. Do you think that percentage is too high or too low?
Actually, I think it's much higher. I introduced amendments in our Department of Defense appropriations bill, and I introduced one to defund the $500 million to Israel, and there were only 6 members of Congress that voted for my amendment. So out of the whole of Congress, there were only 2 Republicans that voted for that amendment. That was myself and Thomas Massey, who, by the way, both of us take $0 from AIPAC. Here's the reality of the situation, Matt, and I'll say this as straight and honest as I can, is it feels like our government is occupied because our government tiptoes every member of Congress.
Well, yes, it's what we've been saying for years. Why are we canceled? Why aren't these people talking to us? This is what I don't get. It's like the word occupied is a very important word because it comes in the making of the saying Zionist Occupied Government, ZOG. So now we have a mainstream politician, well, mainstream known politicians, you know, they are known by the mainstream. But yeah, this has been called ZOG for like 30 years. They even use that term in fucking American History X, the movie. it's like Marjorie Taylor Greene is now absorbing the words of the far right, like Nazi American History X of the 90s. Okay. That's great. It's great, but why is there still separation? What is the plan of Matt Gaetz? Matt Gaetz is doing media right now on O1, the way I was doing media in the 2016-2017. He's touching an edgy question. Coronal mass ejection says we are invisible to them, JF. But why? Why aren't these people, you know, calling for a uniting of the right? Because if they're gonna take essential positions that are basically as far right as you can think of on this question, then what's the difference between me and Matt Gaetz? I didn't fuck young prostitutes. I guess that's the difference. Coronal Mass Ejection says Marjorie Taylor Greene had hired Milo. Wonder if he's still on her payroll. Yeah, it's interesting. Putin tells the US that he will halt the war in exchange for Eastern Ukraine. Well, that sounds like the request that he's been doing for a long time. Bro, PragerU. PragerU will replace PBS in classrooms across the US. After the Corporation for Public Broadcasting announced that it would be shutting down, Democrats warned that the far-left PBS would no longer be able to make educational content for America's school. The good news is that the White House has a new educational partner in PragerU. So you're going to get Jewish Zionist extreme propaganda replacing the communist PBS propaganda. This can't be good. Why? Why? Why do we have to jump from one to the other? It's by design. I mean, the Jews are there to ensure that you get spammed with communism, and when you get tired of it, they're there to sell you the PragerU Zionist conservatism version. Why does everything has to be so painful? Why? Wahed Rex says your taxes in these schools and they are putting your kid in front of a TV. Yeah, yeah. And the TV is controlled by Dennis Prager. I mean, this is what happens when you try to go back and watch the stream. There was a stream where a caller called in, lied about his intent to question, and once he was live on air, asked, "Hey, Charlie Kirk, given your openness to debate IDs, would you debate Nick Fuentes?" And Charlie Kirk went on to a very dishonorable response, saying, "I don't engage with bad actors." Well, that is ad hominem, and if Nick Fuentes was a bad actor, he would have bad IDs, and he would be trying to push bad IDs. So you could undermine his argument and his following by proving his IDs are incorrect or wrong or something. But it's not by calling someone a bad actor that you have accomplished anything in the debate. You are simply running away from the debate, and he's doing so much that he has actually privated the video now because he doesn't want to be seen running from the debate. What else do we have? Voyager 1 currently over 15 billion miles away still operates using 69 kilobytes of memory, 8 track tape, and Fortran code written in 1977.
Wow.
Can you imagine this little probe out there running on its little Fortran code, turning the tape, recording whatever. Oh, bro. Oh, yeah, and this website is interesting. It compares the advances of AI with respect to the average MTurker. So MTurker is this mechanical Turk, literally. You can buy an immigrant, a mechanical migrant. It's basically an Indian that's out there. And you can pay like 30 cents an hour. And you're going to get this Indian is going to be devoted to your task. So I've always been like, I don't understand from an English perspective, because to me, a Turk is a brown person of relatively low intelligence that, you know, I would think of as perhaps a slave. And why is it that Amazon gets away with calling their program the Mechanical Turk? Because literally, I have the impression when I go to Mechanical Turk that I am buying a brown slave. Anyways, that's my French brain. I'm trying to figure out, does Turk mean something else in English? Okay, so Ruth Sternwood has the explanation. The Mechanical Turk was an automaton made to play chess. Okay. But now it's not an automaton. You're specifically buying human beings. Anyways, so the Mechanical Turk is basically 50% Indian, 50% other nations, but similar. And it will perform, these average humans will cost you about, I don't know, $1.10. And they will perform on average at 78% on the ARC AGI score. And what they call a human panel, here I guess it's a human panel of white people, they will score 99% on this ARC AGI leaderboard. So here you have the Indian, here you have the whites, and look at the trajectory of ChatGPT. ChatGPT 5 here, Gemini 2.5 Pro, O3 Pro, Grok 5 Thinking. They're all getting very close to the Indian point of reversal. So I have declared on Twitter that this will be, once these points have conquered this point, this gray point right here, we will have approached the endularity, the moment at which the average AI surpasses the average Indian.
Really enjoyed your recent video on Lauren Southern. My favorite streams of yours are when you gradually provide evidence that builds to a learning about human behavior. Looking forward to the social signal.
The moral signal. The moral signal. Yes, I'm trying to find space in my life where I'll be able to finish this, because I don't want to die without having published The Moral Signal. Probably next year, when I have all my family set up, kids are already in the process of learning, I'm currently homeschooling, so this takes a lot of my time, let me tell you. I deploy a lot of my time, but I see ahead, and maybe in a year or two from now, I can make some space in my life to finish the writing. So my stream about Lauren Southern. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yes. As those are streams where I have a whole story to tell. They're the best streams, by the way. A lot of people tell me, Jeff, why don't you do streams like this every day? Well, it's because it's because it's impossible. I love these deep dives on an individual, on their psychology, or maybe on a philosophical point. I love these deep dives, but There is simply a limit to the number of deep dives you can come up with. And not everyone is interesting. Not everyone can be the subject of a deep dive. And not everyone has released enough information about themselves publicly for a deep dive to even be possible. So I try to do it whenever I can. I still try to produce the best quality show I can, but there is finitude out there in the world. End of the line, Joel says, best streams are the autistic takes, like the one where Trump's assassination attempt was explained. Really? I don't even remember anything special about my coverage of this. Was there anything unique I said? Rodidasid says, JF, the AIs now are good for writing partners. You can brainstorm and bounce ideas off them. They take notes and keep track of everything. Just make sure to ask the AI to keep everything noted in files. Yes, the AIs have to be coached on continuity. Where normally you would expect, you know, if it was a normal person, you come back to them, they know the context of what you discussed previously. But AIs need to be instructed very clearly. Go back to what you had agreed then, and now tell me as a follow-up what... And yes, they are good. They are good at inspiration. If you block somewhere, like I was trying to find the lyrics to a song I wanted to write, well... The AI just gives you exactly what you wanted, because sometimes you know exactly what you want. Like, I want a twist on this sentence that is slightly different, that feels slightly awkward, but that preserves the structure of it and the meaning of it. And Grok can just spout these things. It's like you would have spent maybe 12 hours thinking about it. Grok will just poof. End of the line, Joel says, another great JF stream, that one about the murderer who killed his roommates. JF highlighted all the mistakes, like taking the smartphone on his car journey. Well, yeah, Coburger. And now Coburger has been punished with female nagging by the sisters of the murdered persons. Now Coburger had to endure being yelled at by a female, telling him how miserable he is and how meaningless his life will be, spending the rest of his life in jail. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me. We are Friday. Thank you so much for the generous donations today. Isn't it Friday that Nick Fuentes had said he would have his part two? Unless he has canceled it. Let me just check his Telegram, maybe. Because I don't want to misdirect you. Not doing a show tonight. I will be back tomorrow for part two. So that was a statement yesterday. So it seems that today we would have part two of Nick's attack on Tucker and the whole review of this Tucker Candace hit on him. Perhaps more historical context on what led to Tucker J.D. Vance. I'm certainly going to watch it, because the first was a legendary stream. As far as 2025 goes, the first stream that he did against Tucker may be the top stream of the year. So I definitely want to see part two. I'll be there tonight. Nick Martel says, too many normies believe without questions the foundational myth of Israel clearly have a purpose. New Guy Prime says, Tucker, J.D. Vance? Well, definitely, if you watch the first part, you realize that Tucker has been flirting in the same circles as J.D. Vance, the Teal Palantir circles. You'll see that Tucker has invited J.D. Vance on his show, 46 times, something like this. So definitely, J.D. Vance has been put forward by Tucker and by by Teal. And that raises massive questions, because to what extent are they trying to prop him up? And as Dick Fuentes described him, David Frum, the original neocon, like a warmonger, really a rabid, disgusting warmonger. David Frum has been grooming JD Vance from the start and bragging about how his big strength is the credibility of his story. And when they say this in marketing, the credibility of this of his story, what they mean is this guy is on our side, the elite, but he looks like a white person on the side of the regular white person on the street. That's really what they mean, and Nick Fuentes captured that extremely well. But it's important to understand when they say the credibility of his story, I'm scared, because that means they are trying to make a play on America again, and it's like, oh yeah, weapons of mass destruction, Iraq, Syria involvement, Afghanistan. We have 40 years of lies to the American people. Basically, lie to the American people, get the American government to do something. And it's like J.D. Vance is the next carrier of the lie. And it seems that they're preparing this one so hard and so much that we may not even know what's the end game. What's the end game? Is it ground war on Iran? Is it ground engagement with China? Like, what the fuck is the sacrifice that you're preparing so hard that you have your puppet white person to play that? It's like, wow, you have recruited over the period of decades a white person that you've captured but kept untainted, to keep it untaintedly white American. And you have a plan for this? That sounds like very evil stuff. Bye-bye. Much love, and I'll be on a vacation for the weekend, coming back on Monday.